Hello, and welcome again to Razzle Dazzle Radio. I'm Carolyn Kellerman with my co-host, Judy Templeton. And this is your life, Valerie Lash, our guest today. We're going to learn a whole lot about this wonderful woman, her career, her work at HGC, her love life. Well, maybe not. But anyway, so my first comment is that we met at Dundalk Community College, and I believe it was the late 70s, I'm not positive, and you were handing out roses to all the folks who were writing about, I think it was the Joffrey Ballet. I'm not positive about that. So, long time ago, right, Val?
Indeed, and I had forgotten that, Carol, and I didn't realize it was, you know, that was a long time ago, because I've been at Howard Community College for 39 years. So before that, you know, and I had worked at, well, all three, Dundalk, Essex, and Catonsville Community College. And I was very involved in the theater program at Dundalk. So, gee, that is really funny. That's been a while ago. And we were young and hot.
Yes, right. Judy's going to tell you where she met you or okay. When she gives the year. I don't know.
No. Okay. So Val, you were my acting instructor at HCC in 1989. And I remember that I was just wowed by you. And you taught Stanislavski technique, and you said to reference your pain and bring it out. I can remember that. And I remember you had this cool red suit, and I love the way you dressed.
Well, I can remember you. You were very talented, I thought.
Oh, good. Well, you wouldn't say so otherwise now, but anyway, thank you. I went and got my minor in theater at HCC, and it was a fun ride. It was something I did later on, and it was great. So anyway, all right, Carolyn, I know that you have some interesting questions for Val. So you want to tell our audience how you've even gotten these questions?
Well, yes. So when we decided to have you as a guest, Valerie, we wanted to know everything. And I hope you'll share some stories today.
Oh,
but
I got
just to begin, we asked a few of your friends, you know, what they would ask you if they were, he or she were on the show. So one of the questions, this is a real heavy one. And again, you know, our theme is before, now, and in the future, right? But she said, I would ask Val, when are you the happiest in life? And also, what would your legacy would be if you could choose it?
Happiest in life. Well, during the pandemic, it's really been, you know, snuggling on the couch with my three dogs and three cats. You know, I mean, that makes me very happy. However, I'd say in general, performing, you know, being on stage and holding that audience, you know, whether it be in comedy, I mean, you can hear the laughter, you know, after a particularly funny joke, but holding an audience in the palm of your hand and hearing sniffling, you know, when it's a sad piece, you know, that makes me very happy. When I know I'm moving an audience, that makes me very happy. And what was the other one? Legacy?
This question, by the way, was from your friend, Barbara.
Oh, Brickman. Wonderful. My legacy. I hope
you'd like to know about your legacy.
Okay. Oh. Well, I hope that in my years of performing in particular, that I have moved people, you know, that they walk away from whatever performance that I'm in, or as a director, whatever play that I've directed, you know, with frankly more questions than they have answers, you know, and I feel that as a teacher as well, and as an administrator, as someone who feels that the arts are God's work, you know, of that. And I want people to walk away thinking and questioning, you know, aspects of their own lives. So I would hope that my legacy would be that has happened often. I hope so.
Wow. Now I know you and Judy share a heritage. How about that, Judy? You can give a little hun, can't you?
I can give you one hun. I know Val's from Baltimore hun. Yeah. She knows I'm a hun. So tell us, well, because we like to speak about the past, so tell us about your colorful past.
Well,
growing up in Baltimore, early roots in theater.
I was born in Baltimore, raised in Baltimore County, Eastern Baltimore County on the water. And I was very involved in theater is starting in high school, really. I went to Kenwood High School and did a lot of work in theater there, from stage manager. I was the first student to direct a play, actually, in high school. And then I went on to Essex Community College. I was the very first person at the time to major in theater. They had just started a theater program, and I majored and graduated in theater. I was their very first person. But, you know, Eastern Baltimore County and Baltimore City have been my stomping ground. So then after, you know, I went to Catholic University and majored in theater there, and really, really enjoyed it. And I had wonderful background. Father Harkey was a real character, you know, and I got to know him and when he was there, of course, when he was alive. And then I felt like I needed more background in the literature of theater. So I went on and got a master's in, well, actually I first got my first master's at Catholic U, and primarily that was in production. But then I got my second master's from Morgan University in literature, but they were kind enough to let me primarily study dramatic literature. So that's been kind of my educational background. But when that's starting in East Baltimore.
Okay, I'm gonna jump in, Judy, because on that subject, I'm sure you must have studied with, besides Father Hartke, Carol Graham's father, Bill Graham. Did you work with him?
I did.
So Carol Graham Lehan has a question for you that's really kind of heavy. It says, you have a really unique journey as a female leader in the theater community. What prepared you for that leadership?
You know, I never took a course in theater leadership. Never took a course in that. It's interesting, I think, that being a director of a play in particular are all the skills that you need to be a leader in any, you know, whether it be in academia and a business and all that. What you're trying to do is get all of the principals involved, the actors, the designers, you know, everyone involved, to come to their peak at opening night, to bring all their skills to bear and, you know, organizing all the people, the human beings and their creativity involved and getting to that gold ring. So I think being involved in theater, even as an actor, you know, having the experience of having a wonderful director or even a bad director, because you can say, geez, I would never do that, you know? And so I think that actually theater itself and being a participant as an actor, designer, director, but primarily I think as a director, learning the skills and how to help other people, the other people involved in the creative product, how to bring all of that to bear in a single opening night, and then of course continuing it throughout. And I think that has helped me be a leader, whether it be in theater or in academia.
Well, that feeds into our co-host, Mo Dutterer. And he said, of course, I always have questions. I would be interested in knowing how Valerie got hooked up originally with Howard Community College and why she decided to go there and not someone else.
Well, I had been the director of financial aid at Dundalk Community College, and I had taught all three of the community colleges. I also had spent some years when I was right out of college. I was, believe it or not, a computer analyst and a COBOL programmer. And I had a friend who I'd worked with, Fred Nunley, who was in the business area at Dundalk Community College. And he had gone and became the comptroller at Howard. And at the time, the dean of instruction, Chip Chapdelaine, was looking for an assistant dean. So Fred called me and said, you know, they're looking for somebody that has computer background. And this was early, you know, they're looking for somebody that has teaching and somebody that has been an administrator. And I had all three. So I applied for the job and I amazingly got it. So that's how I first got started. All I have to say, I had a real experience when I walked on campus to be interviewed. I had this overwhelming feeling, just a that I was going to be there for decades. I mean, I had it, yeah. You know, and it was like, and I know exactly where I was, you know, when it happened. I was in a stairwell. It was like this premonition, and I got the job. It was like amazing.
I'm going to turn it back over to Judy in a minute because she's going to ask you about some more sexier, funnier things than the college. But before that, I remember you once told me you dated a relative of Edgar Allan Poe.
I did. I dated a gentleman, his nickname was Pudge, because when he was little, he was Pudgy. And his real name was Edgar Allan Poe III. And he was the grand nephew of Edgar Allan Poe. Yeah, he was a very cool guy, and very rich. It was a short relationship, but it's still, because he was considerably older than me, but you know, but he was fun. And I have to say, you know, now this might be kind of interesting. I have, fortunately or unfortunately, followed the careers of the men in my life. Let me just kind of share that.
Okay. I don't even have to ask her this, Carolyn. She's going to already give it up.
I'm going to tell you about it. So I got married to my high school sweetheart, who when I was 19, and I had started dating him when I was 17, and got married right out of high school, actually, almost. Anyway, he was a computer analyst. So I became a computer analyst. So that relationship didn't last long. I was in my, you know, I guess I was like 20, 21 when that ended. And so then I went to college full time. And then I met at Essex Community College, the director of financial aid. And he was my sociology professor. And so I started dating him. And so then I became a director of financial aid. You know? At Dundalk Community College.
This is a book.
That's right. And then later on, when I was at Dundalk, I met the director of theater there, and I was dating him. And then later, I came to Howard and became the director of theater. So I kind of followed the careers of the men in my life, which, you know, could be a good or a bad thing. In the end, though, I think that I've made them all, each of the careers, my own.
Absolutely. I love that story. And I love the epiphany that you had on the staircase at HCC. And I think those things are so real when you pay attention to them. And certainly you did. Yeah. Well, what I think has made you a very rich actor is all your experiences. I know that you've had some, you know, great magnanimous moments. And I know that you've had some pain and challenges. And I certainly can say from watching you from afar, you have transcended them and just moved in just an amazing way. I think that that's probably integrated with your acting skills too, because sometimes, you know, we have to fake it till we make it.
Indeed. I think that starting my interest in theater was when I was very young. You know, we had one of the first televisions on our, you know, in our life. And we watched a lot of movies. And my idols were Shirley Temple and Marilyn Monroe. I mean, they couldn't be more different, but they were both blondes, you know. Uh-huh. And so I really loved them. And so, and my first grade teacher, Miss Whaley, she encouraged me to get involved in what we had in our elementary school called poetry contests, where you would go to the library and, you know, they'd have hours in the day that you could go, and you would memorize a poem at home, and then you would perform it in front of the librarian. Well, most people would memorize one or two. I would memorize 100. And I would come back in and I'd be like, oh, the owl and the pussycat went to sea in a beautiful pea green boat. And I was like, you know, 7 years old. So every year from first through sixth grade, I would win the contest for my age, for my grade. And then eventually I'd win for the whole school. So that got me started, frankly, in performing and, you know, wanting to be like I wanted to be a movie star from the little up, you know. And then one of the skills I developed as a young person is a scream. I had the loudest scream you've ever heard. Because I developed it, I figured if I can't be a movie star, they hire people in horror movies to be screamers, I'll be a screamer, you know? So I developed a really loud scream.
So did you get in a movie and get to do that?
Well, no. I've done a couple of, you know, video things, but I've never been in a movie and become a screamer, no. But I've used screams in live theater a number of times, you know, and that has been very fruitful.
Actually, that's so interesting you said that, because I just had this memory of something you did when I was taking your class. And you came in and did a scream just to get everybody to pay attention. It scared the hell out of all of us.
I remember that
now that you're saying that. It was a great technique.
I developed it. So, you know, with diaphragmatic breathing, so you're not hurting your vocal cords and stuff. I really worked on it.
Well, all right. So what was your favorite role? What's your favorite role that you ever played?
I can tell you, without hesitation, because I played this role 3 times in my life, and that's Martha and Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf.
I
actually played her in my 20s the first time at Dundalk Community Theater. I was 26 when I played Martha the first time, lots of makeup and whatnot. And then again, I played her in my 40s at Howard Community College, you know, and then 8 years ago, when I was in my 60s, I played her at the Spotlighters Theater.
Right.
Although I can tell you a quick little story. When I was at Howard, we were in the Smith Theater and we had sold out the whole, we did it for only 1 weekend. We sold out the whole weekend of the Smith Theater. So that's like 1,200 people that came to see the show. And the opening of the show, you know, George and Martha are coming in from a party and Martha's drunk and George is kind of half carrying her in. And we were made the entrance in the Smith Theater and the audience left downstage, the door that was right to the hall. Well, right before we were to walk in, the lights dimmed, some people were loud in the hallway. So I ran up the steps and shushed them. And when I turned and came down, I fell down the steps and I just dislocated my knee. And the guy that played George, he was really a sweet guy. And I said, I realized my knee was like dislocated. So I knew what would have to happen is he'd have to pull my leg. So I said, pull my leg. And he was like, no, I can't do that. I said, pull. And so then I became Martha. And I said, God, pull my leg. And he pulled it and he half carried me and dumped me on the couch. I did most of the first part of the play seated. And when I went backstage during one time, they had a wrap for me and ice and all that. And at the time, John Harding was at the Flyer and he did a review. Normally he did not do reviews of a 1 weekend show, but he told that story and he called me, what is it? A libidinous Lucille Ball. I'll never forget it. I had to look up the word libidinous. I didn't even know what that meant, you know. But anyway, that was my story. But Martha has been my signature role. I did my master's thesis at Catholic University on Edward Albee, primarily looking at that play. And so it's my absolute favorite. I love castrating bitches.
Yep. They're the good roles to play.
Indeed.
So what's your favorite play that you've directed?
There's a play, it's called The Kathy and Mo Show, Parallel Lives. And that was Peggy Yates and Audrey Wozniacki played the two roles. And it was a complete joy because we did it really collaboratively. Yeah, Sue Kramer designed the set for that. And then we had an entire female production staff, which was like, that was also a lot of fun. So I'd say that was my favorite play to direct. And it's a hysterical play for one thing, but working with such wonderful women was just what a joy.
This brings me to a question again that comes from Tim Singleton. And it's, what characters do you have an eye on playing in the future? Are there any particular characters you'd like to try on that you have yet to play? And any particular characters you would like to play again? Which obviously you may want to play Martha again in your...
Yeah, I think I'm too old now, but I would give my eye teeth to play Martha again. One of the things I learned about playing Martha for the third time is when I was 26, I did not have the kind of experience that I had, of course, in my 60s. And I did not know the first time or nor the second time that I played Martha, that you could both love and hate a man at the exact same moment. I didn't know that. But when you're in your 60s, you know that.
Yep.
So I was able to enrich that character doing that. So, you know, a role that I've wanted to play for years is in Marsha Norman's Night Mother, to play the mother. You know, that is one that I've always wanted to play. And I think I have a ways to go age-wise. I could probably still do her.
Okay. Yeah.
And to play again, one of my favorite roles was Josie in Moon for the Misbegotten. I would play that again in a minute. Again, I think I'm too old for that now. But that is one of my all-time favorite roles, in addition to Martha and Virginia Woolf.
Did you ever fall in love with any of your leading men?
Almost all of them. Yep. I did. That's one of the dangers. We what do we call that in theater? A showmance, you know? Yeah. I call it more infatuation than, you know, and also directors, you know? Yeah, it's been a rich life of love for me.
Well, that's because you've been in a lot of shows, according to what you're saying. So,
I've been on stage for over 50 years. So, and I've just been fortunate. And I just could share a quick little story. When I was in high school, I was in the wings, ready to come on in a show that I was in. And I remember distinctly, I was even stage right, looking up, and I saw the theater lights were hanging above me. And I can remember saying a little prayer and saying, please, God, for the rest of my life, let me look up from the wings and see stage lights. And now, right before I go on and I'm in the wings, I look up and I say, thank you, God, for letting me, for the vast majority of my life, look up and see stage lights.
You know? I love that. Well, you know what? That's your legacy right there, is finding your passion and living it big, as you have done. That's your legacy for sure. So what do you think in these times? So how do you think theater is going to be coming back? Carolyn shared a little bit of a sad story with me, saying she had been up to New York and glancing over at Broadway. It was just, you know, surreal. So what's your wisdom on how you think some of this is coming back, Val?
Well, actually, I think community theaters are going to come back first.
Okay.
Partially because in professional theaters, the equity theaters in particular, the union, which is Equity Actors Equity Association, they are being very strict about where their actors can work and what kind of environments with regard to COVID. So I think it's going to be a long road for professional actors, but community theater actors, you know, I think, and performances, I think, are going to be more flexible about it. Although the bottom line is until the audience feels comfortable coming back, no theater's coming back. I happen to be on the board of directors of Spotlighters Theater and have, I guess, for it's going on 3 years now. And we're hoping to open after Labor Day. I mean, that's our hope. But, you know, things are up in the air, which means we'd have to start rehearsals. We actually got a $100,000 grant from the state of Maryland to get brand new heating air conditioning unit that is COVID safe. And over the summer, or actually starting soon, we will be installing that. So it'll be a safe environment for audiences, actors, and people working shows. So I think it's probably going to come more from the local and community-based theaters than in the bigger professional theaters. Again, I think part of that has to do with unions' involvement as well.
Sure.
And as a last question,
college, what do you think is going to happen at the college? Do you think that rep will be coming back in person?
Stage, the union is not letting us even rehearse anything. Very, very careful, and it has to do with what kind of air conditioning system we have and heating and all that. So yeah, I'm hoping again for fall. That's what everybody is hoping, but a crystal ball would be nice right now, for sure.
Absolutely. I love that you're working with Spotlighters, because I love, that's just a jewel of a theater. Yeah, it's fantastic. So, and I mean, shout out to Fuzz and Michael for keeping it going. And then when I heard that you were on the board, that makes me really happy. So I hope that they will, you know, certainly continue, because they have the show Must Go On in their blood.
And they've been around for 59 years.
That's it. I know. Yeah. I know. It's amazing. Oh my gosh. Okay. So I know that you still hold near and dear to your heart the role of Martha, but if you could have one other, what would be your coveted role to play?
Well, as I'd said before, I think it would be Marcia Norman's Night Mother, the mother in Night Mother, you know, okay. And that's a two-person play, the daughter and the mother. I think there's somebody comes in at the end, but, you know, primarily it's two people. And so I think that would be a role that I really, really want to play.
And I can't let you leave without asking you the question from Mark Beachy, because he's probably going to put it on his podcast. How can performers of today during these times of COVID and live stream shows create an honest performance as they would do on stage? A tough one, but a good one to end the show.
Yeah, I think that as performers, we have to be part of a world that gets created. And the world is created by the initial playwright, the director's vision, the designer's vision, the act, what the actor brings to it. So it has to be a world that is created with all of these artists. And what makes it difficult, especially when you're Zooming and performing, it is hard to be a part of that world. So I think we have to, as performers, use our imagination more and be very well prepared, not just coming on and trying to pull it out of a hat, you know, but really working together to try to create a world that everybody can be a part of. And I think that that, you know, that's true on live stage, and that is doubly true when you're in separate places trying to create a virtual piece. It's harder, I think. But I think it can be done. But of course, we in the theater all want to go back to live performances. There's nothing like it.
Yes, yes, yes. Because that's the business it is. It's up close, front, and personal. It's, yeah, indeed. Exactly. That's great.
Mistakes happen and you got to deal with them. Walls fall over, a phone rings, and somebody forgets to put the phone on stage. You know, I mean, you got to deal with all those crazy things when you're, you know, you can't stop and rerun it. So
people fall down staircases.
They do. Dislocate their knees. Yep, all that happens.
That's why everybody has to take an acting class and just learn that resiliency right there. That's it. Nice. Helps so much in life, because you learn how to recover on stage, and it definitely helps in life. And you are a perfect example of that, Val. We are honored to have you today and to hear all your stories. We could probably ask a lot more questions, right?
And I have a lot more stories.
Well, that only means one thing. You're coming back on. So we'll get Val Lash part two. So stay tuned for sure. So
thank you so much.
Oh, thank you. Do you know any hopeful openings of anything for sure? Carolyn and I have been trying to dig up some kind of happening performance outside, inside, and we're having a hard time finding one.
Well, I know that Rep Stage is doing a virtual performance, you know, that's coming up. You know, a number of theaters, of course, are doing that. I'm trying to remember the show. It's called Ghostwriter.
And I read that. Yes.
Yeah. And that's coming up in May. So, and of course, there are virtual dance concerts and virtual music concerts, those kind of things. But so Rep Stage in May will be doing Ghostwriter, but it's all still, again, virtually.
Yep. Okay. We'll take it. That's all we got for that. So I guess we have to. So, thanks again, Val Lash. You are a legend for sure. And yes, you can come back and tell more stories, because I know Carolyn has some juicier questions to get to too. So until next time, it's Judy Templeton and Carolyn Kellerman on Razzle Dazzle Radio.
Connect with us. We are Dragon Digital Radio.